by God, learning what that means. I'm recovering from spiritual and emotional abuse and addiction to food, work, and control. And I've had issues with pornography, with alcohol, with depression and rage and panic attacks. It's hit all around us this week. You notice we were a little slim on the band tonight. Two of our members were out, both with death. Rick called in. He was supposed to play drums for us. Last minute called in and said, I can't do it. I have a friend passed away. Got to go be with them. And then Lewis at the last minute texted in and said his wife's sister's husband passed away. So, I mean, it's just like, really? Just all around. I had somebody this week, a wife of one of the staff members, say it's almost like this giant ping pong ball that's just bouncing and you don't know where it's going to hit next. You know, every place it hits, somebody dies. And it's like, really? It just, you can't live in fear, but, you know, it's just like death is part of living. So we're going to talk about grief tonight. We're just going to kind of dig in and hopefully it'll help more than just us. It'll help a wider range because we're really processing a lot of grief these days. There are a lot of different emotions we experience. There's anger, there's fear, there's depression, there's just all kinds of things. But grief is kind of in a league all of its own. It's just you try to stick it. You know how when you sort dirty laundry and you say, well, there's the delicates, that's the lights, there's the darks, you know, whatever. You try to find a pile to put grief in, and there's no pile it fits in. It just doesn't fit with other emotions. So we were on the way to T-ville the other day, and over the beach, if you just want a pretty drive, it's really a pretty drive. But we were driving to T-ville, and she was taking notes for me. I said, I've just got to get some thoughts down for Sunday night. And so she's writing madly, and I'm just sitting there kind of let my mind go, and I just kind of thought of some descriptive words for grief, when it hits like it's hit here lately. It's inevitable. You can't escape. It's inescapable. It's nagging. It's inconvenient. It shows up in times you're not planning on it to show up. It's arbitrary. How many times this week were you just sitting there or just going somewhere, and all of a sudden, boom, it just hit. Megan's gone. You know, just hit like a ton of brick, just arbitrary out of nowhere. It's awkward. You go in a store somewhere with total strangers. You have, you know, business dealings or whatever, and all of a sudden you start tearing up, and they look at you, and you say, I'm sorry. You know, it can be awkward. It can be debilitating. So you just like, what's the use? What's the use of going on? So you just kind of almost get paralyzed in your own skin. It's confusing. I mean, why? You know, why? Why did this happen? Just confusing. It's persistent. You could come up with a lot of different words that are just descriptive words for grief. And I wanted to title the lesson Processing Grief, but when I got to the end of that descriptive list, I realized, no, I don't process grief. Grief processes me. Grief processes me. It's not the other way around. And I think that explains why we try so hard in our culture to either try to avoid grief or to soften it down, water it down some way so it's not so painful. And we do it lots of different ways. Some of us just shut down. Some of us do it through drugs and alcohol. Some of us do it in other ways, but we just shut down. I don't want to feel anything good, and I don't want to feel anything bad. I just don't want to feel anything. So we just shut it down. A lot of us isolate. I've noticed this week here in the church and with staff members, some people wanted to be with the group. Other people's like, no, I don't. I just want to be alone. We isolate. Boy, this is what really hit as I walk. You know, when you're really, really sad, a lot of people just become hyper busy. Just do, work. Or we concentrate here in the church full of pastors. I noticed everybody was concentrating on everybody else. I'll help you with your need. I don't want to process mine, so I'll just help you with yours. That is really interesting. Not in a fun, good way, but it's really interesting in a church staff as big as what we have here, to watch everybody trying to help everybody else, and yet we're all bleeding out and we need help ourselves. Who's going to pastor the pastors? Who's going to minister to the staff? And the church has really stepped up. The church has really stepped up and ministered. So we concentrate on other people. And this is the one thing I want to say, and I don't want to dwell on this, but this has pissed me all week. It has just pissed me off. And I'm being blunt, and I really don't care. I hate it when people, to try to bring comfort to their mind, they try to explain it. God needed another angel. Bullshit. Sorry. That doesn't work. There's a plan in this. God has a plan in this. So God has this manual that he holds, and he goes, I'm getting mad, but you're just going to have to bear with me. God has this manual that he's locked to, and he comes across this page and says, Saturday such and such, kill Megan. As part of my plan, I've got to follow it. Really? That's our God who's got this big plan that he's got to follow to a T, and so arbitrarily he just takes this life and that. I'm not buying that. I used to kind of believe it. I don't buy it at all anymore. If you want to go down, yeah, Ron, it's a rabbit trail. If you want to go down that rabbit trail, people are all the time saying that God has some huge master plan, and I've got to find out my exact place that I fit into that plan, down to my exact job description, but down to every little detail in life. And he's got this big blueprint laid out. And so our God is stuck to a blueprint. And so once he gets the machine running, I'm on a rant, I know I am. Once he gets the machine running, we all just become cogs in a gear. We're just cogs in this giant machine that God's got rolling. And when it's time for our cog to break, we're broken, we're out. Just don't buy that anymore. I can't go there. That's not the God that I've come to love and who loves me here in Pathway. Does God have a plan? You betcha. You betcha. You want to know what it is? To create humanity so he can love us. That's God's plan. That's not a machine. That's not a blueprint. That's I want to make human beings so I can draw them to myself and love them. That's his plan. So what is God's will for your life? What do you need to do in this world? God's plan for your life is to love the person in front of you. Period. The further I get into recovery and the more I learn who this God is, the more I realize he's not going by a blueprint. He's not going by some carefully designed, okay, this has to happen. God is saying, I created you all so I can love you. I'm going to do everything I can to show that to you. And guess what I want you to do? I want you to spread that around to each other. We've made it so complicated and so theological and so doctrinal and so prescriptive. You know why? Because we like to control it. If we know the plan, then somehow we can manipulate it and control it. When you get into relationships, how's that working? You can't control. You just love the person in front of you all the time, everywhere. That's my rant. So, okay, let's get on with some good stuff. But I think grief processes us, and I think we do everything we can to kind of wiggle out of that. We try to avoid it, try to soften it. And I have a lot of patience with a lot of the ways we do until it comes to people who say, I have the answers. I know why that person died. Or I just, no. Yes. You know? How does it process? If grief processes us, how does it process us? I think one thing that I saw this week, and I saw it myself and I saw it in a lot of other people, is grief tends to bring the best out in most of us. Not everybody, but grief tends to bring out the best in us. It instantly rearranges our priorities. We get our priorities straight. I'm not seeking power anymore. I'm not seeking prestige. I'm not seeking money. I'm seeking a neck to hug. I'm seeking somebody to hold. I'm seeking somebody to comfort or somebody to comfort me. My relationships suddenly shoot to the top of my priority list. My community is more important than any other thing. We which, duh, should be our priority all the time. So grief instantly rearranges our priorities. I saw this week, not many, because I don't keep track of these kind of things, but I know of one case. I watched this week as two enemies hugged each other's neck in the sanctuary. I got choked up. I thought, oh my, oh my. Grief has brought these two people together. And it was genuine. It was not fake. It was genuine. So it rearranges our priorities. We find ourselves hugging our enemies. I think another thing grief does is it gives us a God's eye view of the person who's gone, who's deceased. All of a sudden, we're able to see more clearly than we could when they were alive. We're able to see their heart's intentions. Now, with Megan, it was pretty easy to see. She was a freaking angel. But I've seen other people who pass, and they kind of have mixed reviews. Well, they were a booger. And when they die, all of a sudden you realize, you know what? Yeah, they were a booger. They were a booger. But you know what? God used them to do some pretty cool stuff. They really brought some good things to the mix that nobody else could bring. And so you're able to see more. You're able to see as angry with people's mess ups as we are. And I think God says, I'm too busy looking at the good stuff. I'm not going to sit here and pick away at them. I'm too busy celebrating the good things I see in these people. So I think it gives us a God's eye view of the person, their heart, their intentions. And then the other thing that just exploded this week, not just at Broadway, but everywhere, the thing that exploded is we realize what we can do. Isn't it crazy that it takes a whole church to pick up the load that Megan left? It takes a whole freaking church. But I saw people step up and say, I can do my part. I see it in myself to do this. You know, what she did over here, I can do that. And all of a sudden we realize the potential that we have. Now, this doesn't happen when everybody passes. But when in Megan's passing, we discover what we can really do. I think the second, the first thing that how grief processes us is that it brings out the best in us. But I think the second thing is that it breaks us open. Good luck being a stoic. Good luck. You know, good luck being all straight-faced and tearless. Good luck with that one. I didn't see anybody pull that one off this week. I saw people broken wide open. Broken just wide open, heaving, crying, puddle of tears. Grief levels the playing field. But, you know, when you become authentic with your emotions, and grief will do that to you, when you become authentic with your emotions, we all suddenly become equal. Put their pants on just like we do, or they do other things, just we won't say that, but they have to, you know what I'm talking about. They do other things just like we do. Well, grief is one of those things. None of us who cared anything about Megan or the other people who are gone, none of us who cared at all were able to just be Mr. or Mrs. Stoic through here. It broke us down, and we all were exposed for who we are, which is broken, vulnerable, powerless human beings. Boom, we're broken down. Maybe that's what happens at the foot of the cross when we see that death and we gather there. There is no hierarchy. There is no somebody with any claim to fame. It just obliterates all of that. And we're all the same. The thing about the way grief breaks us down is it also breaks us apart. And the cracks that it causes in us, some will kind of mend back, but not completely. The older you get, the leakier you get in lots of ways. But the older you get, the leakier you get, because you have more and more broken places and more cracks and more fissures in you. And so those cracks and those fissures are places where grace can get in, and where grace can get out. And so as grace breaks us down and breaks us apart, it makes us much more receptive to grace and much more generous in giving grace. I think Jesus, when he was here, was probably a hoot. We don't get Middle Eastern humor, especially 2,000-year-old Middle Eastern humor. But some of the stuff he said about the board coming out of the guy's eye, and he was cracking jokes. He said some funny stuff. And I think Jesus laughed with his disciples, and the movies portray Jesus as this somber, stoic guy that went through life and spoke in hushed tones, and, you know, but I think he laughed, I think he farted, I think he just did all kind of crazy stuff, and, you know, you can see him sitting there eating a meal and in the middle of it just belching and saying, boy, that was good, you know, and the disciples punching each other, and there he goes again, eating too much, whatever. But I think he was human in every way, which means he was humorous, and he enjoyed life. But I think that you can't really enjoy life unless you embrace the other side of it too. And Isaiah, when he prophesied the coming of Jesus, he said he would be a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. Jesus knew about grief, and it wasn't in a class or from a book or from a lecture. He knew it because he felt it and he lived it. He was a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. And when you think about his big debut, he gets this big crowd of people. They go out on this hillside, and he's getting ready. This is in Matthew. He's getting ready to preach his first big-time sermon with people just everywhere, just waiting. What's he going to say? What's he going to say? And the first words out of his mouth, blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are those who, we use the word meek, you could use the word gentle. I broke horses for years. I didn't want a wild horse, I wanted a gentle horse. And you know how you get a horse gentle? You break them. Blessed are those who are broken and down to the point of being gentle. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst after the healthy things in life, after the good things in life. So Jesus understood sorrow. He understood grief. And like I say, it's not because he read it in a book. It was because he lived it. And it was his whole, in Luke, he said over and over, he said, unless a grain of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it won't produce any fruit. It's not in our victories that we produce so much fruit. It's in our suffering. It's in our sorrow. It's in our grief. And this sucks, you all. I would rather have Megan back and have no grief any day. Any day. But to go through this and come out 6 months later, and we wouldn't say it out loud, but we might whisper it to ourselves, whew, I survived that. That's a travesty. One of our closest friends dies, and all we got to say about it is that I survived. I made it through it. That's a waste. Pathway. When we say the Serenity Prayer, we say that hardship is the path to peace. That's where we got our name, from the Serenity Prayer. Hardship is the path to peace. And as much as it sucks, just survive. It hurts. And as much as we want Megan back, let's not just survive this ordeal. Let's not just go through it and say, well, I made it. But let's let grief do what it needs to do in us. Let's let grief process us instead of trying to manage it or control it. Let it do its thing in us. Jesus, thank you. That's my closing prayer.